Hey folks, thank you for becoming a member of Cafe Insider. In addition to the new Cafe Insider podcast, we're sharing bonus material from my interviews on Stay Tuned with Preet. This is exclusively for you. Hope you enjoy it.
The whistleblower story is amazing. Not that we know.
Can we talk about
that
for a minute before we start?
What the hell do I know?
I think it's a big thing.
Why don't you invite people to the New Yorker Festival in Russian?
Ah, пожалуйста, приглашаем читателям New Yorker Festival.
That sounds like English. I understood every word you said.
Well, because these are big, fat, proper nouns.
I see.
Yeah.
All right.
Я надеюсь, что все будет на фестивале. I hope everybody will be at the festival.
I'm curious to see what notes you use when you... when you interview people.
Oh, they're very good, I have to say. The prep they give me is really good. Especially in those rare instances where I haven't read the 800-page book on, you know, Capital or something. Rare.
Right.
Though it may be.
Right. Okay, ready?
Yeah. But the thing one has to avoid is what
you have the right to remain silent.
What I call Jewish listening. Jewish listening is this. If someone is practicing Jewish listening with you, it means they're just counting in their head, waiting for you to shut up so that they can talk again.
who said this in the last couple of weeks? I had not heard this phrase before, but someone was interviewing. I think it was someone on CNN interviewing Corey Lewandowski, and I had not heard this phrase before. It's like you're listening with your mouth, which I got to use that.
He was quite brilliant the other day. I have to say, that move that he pulled with, can you read to me from page 91? I can't find it.
Well, also, you know, do you feel that you have an obligation to be honest with the press? He said he does not.
Well, there you go. In all your years in law enforcement, did you ever figure out what is that little courteous thing where the cops make sure that you don't bump your head on the car as they ease you into the back seat of the car? Somebody's guilty of murder and you've got, they're all cut.
Donald Trump?
Well, I think this is the one good question Donald Trump has ever asked. Why do they care if he bumps his head or not?
Because these are people who are innocent until proven guilty, and there's no reason to bang people up.
I'm not suggesting they bank them up.
Right.
But it just
seems... you're trying to make sure they don't hit their head.
Because they're
often cuffed behind the, you know, their arms are cuffed
behind. Which, by the way, hurts. I think it is the one question he's ever asked, and I thought, the man has a point.
All right. Enough of you asking me questions. So forgive this next question.
Yeah.
But I've been struggling with this word and what it means. And some people use it as a boast, and some people use it pejoratively.
Yeah.
Is the New Yorker elitist? And what does it mean to be or not to be elitist?
Well, if the word elitist is used, as I think most people use it nowadays, as a cudgel, as something to say that's something that this other person is, and I'm just a plain-spoken person of common sense, then we run away from that, you know, because we all want to be thought of as, you know.
Good.
But if you're asking me, is it something that requires some background to understand all of it or a lot of it? Yeah, that's true. What I don't want the magazine to be, or the website, or the radio, or everything else we do, is snobby.
What's the difference between snobby and elitist then?
Well, I think it should be intelligent. I think it should be fair. I think it should be funny. And not be elitist in the sense of presuming that everybody knows everything about everything. I don't want it. I didn't grow up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had encountered the New Yorker that I saw as elitist, it would have alienated me. It really would have. I think one of the things that we have going against us is that the symbol of the New Yorker is this guy in a top hat with a monocle who goes by the name Eustace Tilley. And the reason that symbol was there, it was as a joke. When Harold Ross began the magazine, it was a satire of these kind of idiots who walked around New York in these outfits. Unfortunately, I think there's a sizable number of people who take that now as a sign that it's not a joke, but rather some sort of, this is who we think we are, that we're looking through the world or at a butterfly through a monocle, and we don't. When Dexter Filkins goes to Afghanistan and he's getting shot at, and he's, you know, as great a foreign correspondent as anybody since the Second World War. That is hardly elitist activity. And when Ben Taub is in Syria, or when people are writing on culture, it's not meant to be alienating. A great New Yorker piece should be clear enough to invite people in without sacrificing anything in the intelligence. You're asking about Steve Bannon.
Correct. So Steve Bannon, how surprised were you about the firestorm?
I think some of it occurred because it was Labor Day and it was headlined in the New York Times as Steve Bannon headlining the festival. He was one of 50 guests.
Yeah.
So it was outsized. It was unpleasant. I did not cover myself in glory.
If you had to do it over again, you would not have invited him.
I don't know. I'm very torn.
Look,
we've had conservatives at the festival. Some refuse to come when we invite them. Dick Armey, who helped begin the Tea Party, was a guest at the festival. And that, I just think what's happened in the last 2.5 years and is that the pitch of political dialogue is at a fever pitch because of the era that we're living in.
Did you consider that had you done it all over again, you might not have invited him or only invited him once you laid the groundwork?
I've turned this snow globe upside down and forwards. Of course, right. I've considered it backwards and forwards.
But then once you invited him, was there some loss to the capitulation?
Probably. But yeah. I grew up in a different era. I grew up in an era in which, you know, William F. Buckley would have Allen Ginsberg and a member of the Black Panthers and somebody from the right on the same show. But we're not living in that era. And this is not journalism. The Netherland here, and again, I'm not making excuses. I'm not saying this turned out all that great, to say the least. The journalism part, I fight to the end of time, the right to and the need to talk to whomever, whenever you can. The fact that this was a festival and Bannon to any number of people here was a very particular figure. That's where the yeah. problem set in. And it was a bunch of decisions that had to be made within very quickly.
Right. So how do you draw the line?
Believe me.
How do you draw
I don't know.
So what kind of person is okay to invite and what kind of person
I can't
not?
Answer that, Preet. And I we've had conservatives before. Why the Bannon thing lit a match like that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't say exactly, but I have my suspicions that it has. I will not stop doing journalism about anybody or anything.
Right. I mean, is there something
And that's
about,
the important thing about the New Yorker. Yeah. The festival is a wonderful event. And again, we have people with very differing views on a lot of things, whether it's abortion, whether it's about the politics of the moment, whether it's about guns, whatever. We've had all kinds of discussions. Bannon just seemed to have a different effect.
Yeah, look, it can also be the case, and I'm not sure you're saying this.
And it's also me.
It's a business decision.
So it wasn't a business decision.
Okay.
It was a matter of, I'm in charge of a lot of people, a lot of vocal people, and people I respect. And rather than have this out in real time, it was important for me to, that was an argument that should have been had beforehand, then proceeded one way or another. The first time I ever heard the name Pete Buttigieg was in the following way. I went to interview Barack Obama for the last time, last serious time on the record, the day after he had his meeting with Trump in the White House, a day or two later. And it was like arriving at the world's most somber funeral home, the West Wing of the White House. Obama and I had a long interview, went, you know, an hour and 45 minutes, which in presidential time is a lot.
Yeah. Not in the time of executive time.
No.
In the era of executive time.
I love that concept.
Not so long.
I love executive time. And after a while, I said, so what do you got on the bench? What does the Democratic Party have? Obama, you know, takes a long Obamian pause. Well, I can't do Obama, but you get the idea. You can hear You can hear the grandfather clock ticking in the Oval Office. It's so calm. That's his move. That's his temperament. And he said, well, there's Kamala Harris, who he seems to like a bit. Then he started to stumble. He said, well, there's that guy in South Bend, Indiana. gay, and he couldn't quite place the name, or he mispronounced it, I forget what.
Right.
That was it. That's what he came up with. Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and he said, and of course, there's, you know, Joe Biden is around and da, da, da.
You talked about how music is sort of an overlay of politics, or maybe underlies politics, and that there are soundtracks in America. What is the soundtrack of America today?
Well, I think it depends on who you are and where you live. I mean, the soundtrack of America today could be country music, which is...
You like country?
I do. I like older country music. If I'm being truthful, I love Johnny Cash. I love Dolly Parton. I love the Carter family. Hank Williams is one of the great American songwriters. And I love... Look, it for me, everything started aesthetically, and if I had any aesthetic anything in my life, it started because I listened to this adenoidal Minnesota kid, Bob Dylan, and I thought, what is this? It wasn't confection, it wasn't pop, but it was exciting, and it was weird, and I didn't understand it. And everything new that came my way as a kid, he was the hub of the whole thing. So what is, and he mentions Allen Ginsberg, I go read Allen Ginsberg. Allen Ginsberg mentions T.S. Eliot, I go read that. So it all began with this kind of rock and roll hub of Bob Dylan or folk music or whatever it is. And so I learned about country music because of that too, because he was telling me I should listen to the Carter family or Johnny Cash, who we performed with early on. As a kid, if you can latch onto something that's great and varied, it can lead you all kinds of places, and it doesn't matter where you begin almost.
Favorite Bob Dylan song?
That's like saying to, you know,
I know
a sort of minister, what book of the Bible do you like the best? But, you know, if I guess...
2 Corinthians, right?
2 Corinthians.
Is that the one?
I love 2 Corinthians. It's the best. That's my favorite Bob Dylan song, 2 Corinthians. It's in the early Jesus.
All right, you don't
period.
Have to answer the question. So I'm learning from the master.
I love Visions of Johanna.
Thank you for your time. Before we go, one more time, how do people get tickets for the New Yorker Festival?
I think they go to newyorker.com, and it's very easy from there to find their way.
Thanks again for becoming a member of Cafe Insider. Listen to the Cafe Insider podcast every Monday with me and Ann Milgram, and stay tuned every Thursday.